You are listening to the IEEE Computer Society Standard Speakers Series podcast, featuring acknowledged experts sharing the current state, knowledge, and benefits of computer-related standards. This program is supported by the IEEE Computer Society Standard Speakers Bureau, a joint coordinated effort between the chapters and standards activities boards of the IEEE Computer Society. It's designed to bring advanced and current computing standards information to local chapters. Please visit www.computer.org to learn more about this program, membership with the IEEE Computer Society, and the wealth of current technical information, community services, and personalized services for the world's computing professionals. Now, here's part one of Joe DeCure, recorded on February 5th, 2007 in Vancouver, British Columbia. He's speaking on Ultra Wideband Update, IEEE 802.15.4a and ECMA 368.
So today, there are different scales and different applications for wireless networking. There are third generation cellular data systems deployed now and fourth generation systems that are being designed. Those of you who are members of the IEEE Computer Communication Societies in particular may find articles about these frequently. They're what are called metropolitan area networks, or WiMACs, based on 802.16 family standards that are either issued or under development. There are what are called local area networks, 802.11, also known as Wi-Fi, and those family of standards. There are personal area networks. Bluetooth, parts of it have been encoded as 802.15.1, and there's a multimedia standard not widely used called 802.15.3. There is an alliance called Zigbee that promotes use of networking on very short range, very low power for industrial applications. And there's a new standard a year and a half old called ECMA 368 for high rate ultra wideband. This is stylistically, but not to scale. On short ranges, 10 meters, that's called personal area network. Local areas are nominally 100 meters. Metropolitan areas networks, typically you'll have a tower, focused antennas, and you may get 2 to 6 kilometers in range. Those are approximate. And wide area networks like 3GPP, the range from any one tower might be 2 to 6 kilometers at the very high limits. But in fact, because the towers are networked, you effectively have a continental network, wide area. Many of you have those things in your pockets. So let me compare for a moment the spectrum, meaning frequency, and the power involved. So this axis is transmit signal power, and this line here represents minus 41 dBm per megahertz. That means approximately a hundredth of a milliwatt per megahertz of bandwidth. That limit happens to be the level that the US FCC and the Canadian regulatory agencies allow unintentional radiators to transmit. So this notebook right here is allowed to generate that much power over this band as an unintentional radiator. If it generates more, it's not allowed to be sold. So GPS is in the 1.5 gigahertz range. Various digital cell phone systems are in the 1.8 gigahertz range. I left out stuff below a gigahertz. The industry, scientific, and medical band around 2.4 is commonly used for Bluetooth, 802.11 family, some cordless phones, and microwave ovens. If you wondered why your Wi-Fi doesn't work very well when you're cooking, that's why. It might be leaking. There's another band called UNII in the 5 gigahertz range, and 802.11a is there, and you can go to Costco and buy cordless phones that work there. The ultra-wideband spectrum, the signal power is all limited to that minus 41 dBm level. Excuse me. I'm going to compare them in a different degree, a little bit more metric. These are nominal numbers. GSM technology has something called Edge, widely deployed. Nominal RF power might be 600 milliwatts, sometimes a little more if it's close to the tower and can tell it'll be less. But we're talking now 6/10 of a watt. When you hold that phone up to your ear, think about that. The nominal range is a couple of kilometers. The bandwidth per channel is 200 kilohertz, 2/10 of a megahertz. And the nominal data rate is 384K. What that really means is that at peak, if you happen to have it for a millisecond or two, that's what you're getting for that millisecond. There's a technology called EVDO. I'm not going to translate that. From the CDMA world, and the transit powers are the same and the ranges are the same, the bandwidth is much higher. And the peak data rate in PowerPoint engineering that they'll deliver is as high as 2.4 megabits per second. In the WiMAX world, the nominal transmit powers are lower, maybe a quarter of a watt. You may have a focused antenna, though. You may have much longer range as a result. The channel bandwidth is substantially higher, and the data rates at peak are substantially higher. In the 802.16 world, generally speaking, no one channel gets all of that bandwidth. It's all sliced up not only in frequency but in time. I'm not going to go there today, but one of the reference books that I have listed in the references has a nice description. For common Wi-Fi, including what's in this notebook right here, nominal transmit power in the low band, in the ISM band, will be 50 milliwatts. Up in the UNII band, it might be 200 milliwatts. The nominal range is 100 meters. The nominal channel bandwidth is 25. That might double with 802.11n. And the nominal peak data rate, the one they'll put on the box, is 54 megabits per second. You see a trend here. More bandwidth, more data. And Bluetooth with what's called enhanced data rates. Nominal power of a single milliwatt, that would be 0 dBm. Nominal range is 10 meters. It won't even reach across the room to Dave over there. It's only got a megahertz per channel at any given instant, and its data rate is from 1 to 3 megabits per second. So a lot of different ranges, a lot of different powers, a lot of different data rates. But your mileage may vary. All the successful wireless technologies have to make adjustments for interference that's coherent or not, to impairments of various kinds. Multiple signal paths means self-interference. Vulnerable systems that they have to avoid interfering with, like aircraft or pacemakers, and other contending devices. Like the reason we call the mobile phone system the cellular phone system is they have dispersed towers, each of which has a cell around it that it supports. And I have a cell phone to turn off. Excuse me. I didn't plan that. So the reason they have cells is so that they can have spatial reuse of frequencies. Otherwise, those towers would interfere with all the other towers. If they make them farther enough apart in the same frequency, then you can reuse them. And then the data rate that you actually get at the application will be discounted not only by the impairments to the channel, but by the overhead from the media access control layer, what's called the MAC layer. We're not, in this case, talking about Steve Jobs or about hamburgers. The applications are all over the place, but in the cellular world, the dominant application is still voice. And even the people deploying 3G, one of the reasons they do that is that the higher the data rates that any given phone can handle, that means the more customers they can handle with the same number of towers. Getting towers built is expensive, so having higher performance, higher data rate equipment at each tower means you can sell a lot more monthly service plans. There's money in it for them. But given those high data rates, they can also repackage that data and sell it to mobile data users who today use it for the most common internet access and email applications. That works all the way down. WiMAX, one of the big applications, will be backhaul for Wi-Fi hotspots and offering broadband to people who are out of range of the wired networks. And around the world, WiMAX is going to get deployed in India, Africa, rural China, places where they are not cabled now, and where it's a whole lot easier to put WiMAX than it is to run copper. You're all familiar with Wi-Fi. Is there anybody here in this room who does not have access to Wi-Fi in their notebooks or their personal computers? Only one. And then there's Bluetooth. Most of you have probably heard of Bluetooth. More than a billion devices have now been sold that have Bluetooth capability. And soon it will be hard to buy a cell phone that doesn't have it. But the killer application is not talking to other cell phones. The killer application is talking to those headsets so that you can drive and talk at the same time, legally. I remind you to stop me if you have questions. So, aren't we done yet? Are we there yet? Why go faster? People have applications that need a lot higher data rates. The most popular one these days is delivering file or photo or music object transfer from device to device, or to deliver streaming compressed video. We don't yet have the data rates to deal with uncompressed streaming high-definition video. That will have to wait for millimeter wave, 60 gigahertz stuff. It's another story for another day. Another reason to go farther is to get higher spatial capacity. When I go to 802 meetings, they require people to sign in electronically and vote every 2 hours. They don't hand out any paper except for schedules. All the papers are handed out electronically. They put them on servers and they have Wi-Fi access points all around the room. Imagine a room sort of on this scale, except much larger, with 1,000 engineers in it all trying to get access at the same time. And you start thinking about what kind of service density you can have. Imagine that you had a Wi-Fi access point somewhere in this room. How many people are in this room? How many bits per second per person can you deliver? I'll be addressing that with a subsequent slide. Another incentive is to have much lower cost per bit. The ultra-wideband radios cost more chip power to deliver data, or to be, you know, per second running than the older radios do, but because they deliver so much data, the actual amount of energy per bit is substantially lower. And in the battery-operated handheld world, joules per bit matters a whole lot. So those are the incentives. Those are the things that are driving people to do this work. Any questions? So I'm going to drill a little bit into spatial capacity, the subject I was just alluding to. Measure the amount of data delivered per user in a given space. So, for example, go back 30 years. First cell towers in New York, they put on one big tower, and it could support 545 users tops. It had a whole lot more power. And the phones themselves would be 6 watt, not a 0.6 watt, because they were a lot farther away from the tower. But that means take all that much space and your service density is only 500 and some users per square miles, plural. It's not very good. It's hard to justify that tower for that much money. So the cellular technology means by dropping the power, by bringing things closer together and spending the money to have more towers, you can serve a whole lot more people. And that trend works with this. So higher capacity means more users better served. So the following chart lays out some of these things. And they're approximations because I haven't discounted them for Mac overhead, which varies from technology to technology. But here we go. Bluetooth 2.0, nominal range 10 meters. So its nominal service area is 314 square meters. Now, maximum data rate is 3 megabits per second. Divide that in and you get 9.6K bits per second per square meter. So each one of you sitting out there is occupying, let's call it a square meter. So if there was a room full of you sharing one of these things, you each might get that on average. Do you follow me so far? Let's follow this a little further. So suppose you have 11G, which you're familiar with. This thing has 11G. It's got a lot longer range. That means whatever bits per second it's delivering is spread out over 100 times as much area. It's got a lot more bits per second. Spread out over more area gives you less bits per second per square meter. 802.15.3, technology I'll allude to later, but it's just an ancestor of ultra-wideband. It was designed for multimedia networking, uses ISM band. It has short range, so it's the same area, much higher data rates. So lo and behold, 172K bits per second per square meter. Well, that's almost broadband. I remember not very long ago, just before the turn of the millennium, when getting that much data on DSL was really exciting. Some of you remember how exciting it was to get ISDN at 64K. So the first ultra-wideband standard scales data rate with distance. So over 10 meters, same range, it can be expected to run as high as 200 megabits per second, which delivers even more, almost four times more bits per second per square meter. And if you scale it down to only 3 meters, just from me to not even that projector, I can go 480 megabits per second over only 28 square meters, meaning I'm now at 17 megabits per second per square meter. Those are huge factors of 10,000 to 1 in service. How many of you ever sat in a room or a classroom and tried to use shared Wi-Fi and it was congested and it was a little slower than you'd like? That's the point. Power per bit. So we're talking joules now, not instantaneous power. So energy is power times time. So to approximate these numbers are lower bounds, again, because they're not discounted by the MAC. Time to send the data, which is the data rate divided by the the amount of data divided by the rate, times the operating power. And I've got two charts here. One is I'm going to talk about the RF power, and one is I'm going to talk about the power consumed by the chip, because this one actually is a lot larger. These are lower bounds, as I say. And to get rid of leading zeros, instead of calculating energy per bit, I calculated energy per megabyte. So these numbers are for delivering 8,000 bits. So estimating RF power. So at nominal bit rates, ranging from 11 to 480, and transmit powers from previous graphs, 802.15.3 is a short-range radio. It's a two-tenths of a milliwatt nominal transmit power. Ultra-wideband is even lower. It's around a tenth of a milliwatt aggregate transmit power. So here's how many microjoules it takes to send a megabyte of data with 11B. It takes 36.4 millijoules. So it takes some fraction of a joule to deliver. 11G, just by running faster with the same transmit power, is a lot better. So less battery drained. But take a look. Bluetooth, even though it's much slower from an RF standpoint, because its RF power is so low, the actual amount of RF energy it takes to deliver that much data is factor of three down. This one is radically lower. It's a whole lot faster than this, less RF power as well. So it's only 30 microjoules to deliver a megabyte. That's pretty nice if you're a battery-powered thing. And this is even better because it's substantially faster and even lower RF power. You think that's a no-brainer. That's why we built this. Careful. If I look at, I did not make one graph that had both the chip power and the RF power. But these things all use digital signal processors running at fairly high rates. And the faster they're running, the more power they eat. So the people I talk to tell me that these chips typically draw about 200 milliwatts, and these draw maybe 250 milliwatts because they're doing more processing. So you get a higher data rate, but you have to spend it. So the advantage in terms of power is still there, but it's not quite as high. This one, on the other hand, remember the RF energy per megabit was so low? Because it takes If you were to do another measure, which would be the bit rate per chip power, Bluetooth isn't all that good all after all. Still takes 160 micro millijoules, you know, 1/6 of a whole joule to deliver a megabyte. So the people who make Bluetooth things now who think, oh, I'd like to be able to send my movie or my photos from this camera to this camera phone with Bluetooth have noticed numbers like that and thought, wait a second, that's a lot of power to draw out of that battery. So they find this attractive because it eats 10 times as much power in today's technologies, but it delivers way more than 10 times more bits per second. So the amounts of energy it takes to deliver a megabyte are lower than 11G and drastically lower than Bluetooth. That's what attracts their attention.
Thank you for listening to the IEEE Computer Society Standard Speaker Series podcast. If you would like additional information on the standards discussed in this program, or would like to learn more about membership with the IEEE Computer Society and the advanced technical information available, please visit www.computer.org. Some of the music provided is from the Podshow PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.